Welcome in, everyone, to the Batflip Podcast. My name is Damien with Matt and David. As you can see today, we all have face cams on finally for the first episode of this becoming a thing all the time now. So I'm sorry you have to see David's face, but hey, you'll get to see him spew about the Cubs on this episode to make you feel better about it. So before we get into it, we're going to talk about the NL Central today. Obviously, the outlook on their 2024 season. We have some Red Sox news with an extension plus a big in-time injury there. But before we get to all that, how are you guys doing on this wild start to the NFL free agency, which is nothing like MLB free agency day?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Not very happy with MLB free. I'm not happy with MLB free agency either, but I'm not very happy with NFL free agency because my team's players are all leaving. I'm a big Dolphins fan, and it's just every time you look up, somebody else has signed a big contract with another team. But I kind of had a feeling it was coming because of they have mismanaged their salary cap for like 3 years in a row, and the credit card bill is due, and it's not fun, but. You know, it is what it is, and so that had been great, but everything else has been fine. So how have you been doing, David?
I'm doing good. I get to react to NFL stuff because I just play fantasy football, so I don't know. I don't have a team. I don't have any investments. I was laughing that the Bears were involved in all the Saquon rumors all offseason, and all the Bears fans are trying to be excited about DeAndre Swift. I thought that was funny. Because I wouldn't be excited about DeAndre Swift when I was getting listed as a Saquon suitor. So I think Saquon Barkley and the Phillies is going to be monstrous. And who on earth is paying Kirk Cousins $180 million? I don't know what's going on there.
A team that's probably going to win a lot more than they have in the last few years.
Yeah.
The Falcons are historically cursed to never have good quarterback play or have a good quarterback and then lose in the Super Bowl.
The one thing you got to look at is that NFL contracts are a lot different from MLB contracts. Like, his cap hits are not bad at all. So
all I gotta say is, if you had to watch Desmond Ridder the last 2 years, you would also pay Kirk Cousins $180 million.
I like Desmond Ridder, but I thought he needed to sit a little, and they just started him like right away. It's like, awful.
I liked him coming out of the draft, and it was not good. Anyways, this is a baseball show. We've talked too long about football already. But let's go ahead and start with the Red Sox news. The big news that kind of came out, like, it's kind of one and the other here, is that they were working on an extension for Brayan Bello. They got that done, which I think is 5 years, $55 million with an option for 21 or 22 million for that. I think it's 6 year.
It's six total years, $55 million, 2030 club option.
Okay, yep. So 6 years, not five. Yep. I thought five.
Options counted as the sixth. I'm not sure.
Maybe. And then right inside that same timeline, as that was all happening, we got news that Lucas Giolito had some issue with his elbow and was going for MRIs. And then it came out today, actually, that he's going to be undergoing elbow surgery. We don't know what the elbow surgery is yet, but we can all speculate what it's going to be. Most likely a Tommy John or internal brace or something that's going to keep him out for the year. So, Matt, what do you think about the extension and then the Giolito news kind of all compounded into one there?
Yeah, well, the extension is really interesting. Brayan Bello was a very highly rated prospect coming out. He had some control questions, but his stuff's always been good. His fastball velocity is, the averages in that 96 to 97 range. His stuff's awesome. He pitched his first full big league season last year after throwing, about 60 innings in 2022, and it was pretty decent. He's a young pitcher, young starter. It wasn't fantastic, but it wasn't bad. A 4.24 ERA, 4.54 FIP, 1.6 WAR. The good news about his season last year was that his walk rate was a career low on any level except for high A in 2021, which was only 30 innings. So he had a very good walk rate compared to what his typical numbers have been. Or at least what the question mark about him was. And so that was nice to see. You know, he's just a young starter that, you know, they bought out a couple years of free agency. So I'm pretty, you know, I'd be pretty happy with that if I was a Red Sox fan. They need the pitching. And this is a guy that seems like would potentially be like a long-term answer for them in their rotation. And then Lucas Giolito, I mean, that injury sucks. It's one of it's like I've talked about with that whole, like, sign a pitcher with an opt-out type thing. Like, now you're on the book for two seasons of his money when he's probably not going to pitch very much at all. So that opt-out thing would be a hang-up for me if I was signing pitchers. It's different for position players where it's mostly a performance thing, but for a pitcher like that, it's just now you're going to have 2 years, you're paying him like $20 million. And, you know, assuming that it is Tommy John, which, I mean, he's having surgery on his elbow and he's out for the season, so it's probably Tommy John. He won't be back till at least like second half of next year. And, you know, so he's definitely not opting out of the $19 million next year. And so that's really unfortunate for the Red Sox. It's part of the risk of signing that. I don't know how much – I don't know how good Giolito was going to do for them, but I guess we won't be able to see it now. And it's a bummer to see anybody go down with that injury. It's a big deal.
Yeah, Lucas Giolito was an interesting signing in the first place for the Red Sox. And, you know, that's not an – you know, we went over the AL East a couple of weeks ago. That's not an organization that's, like, winning this season. So that doesn't hurt their books, right? I mean, in theory, they can potentially offload Giolito in a trade, presuming he opts in next year and needs some of the money to try and get back a prospect for a team trying to maybe buy a second-half starter, right? But – you know, that's not going to change any outlook for the Red Sox. They're still not going to be a good team, and this kind of guarantees it. We thought maybe they would jump into the Jordan Montgomery or Blake Snell markets. That hasn't happened, right?
I think this makes it less likely for them to do that because, you know, originally you could say, well, they might be a pitcher away. Well, now you're more than one pitcher away.
Right.
I mean, it's...
Yeah.
You know, but...
Right. So congrats to Ryan Bello, though. You know, this is a guy who threw 157 innings last year. There aren't a whole lot of guys who are able to put together, you know, so many innings right now. And, you know, Ryan Bello was able to stay healthy last year and put together a good season, gets paid for it. You know, I think there's maybe a little more in the tank. His whiffs dropped a lot the last couple of years for a guy who throws up in the mid and high 90s. That's not really what you want. It seems like he was getting more grounders. He's like a 56% ground ball guy. That's a, you know, he leads with a sinker, right? So his fastball velocity is high, but the sinker's not a high fastball pitch, and he's throwing strikes and getting grounders. Not exactly the same type of pitcher I was thinking he would be coming out, knowing his velocity, knowing that's, you know, the slider. But, you know, hey, Craig Breslow's first kind of big move as the GM, I think, is to kind of lock up one of the young players through some years of free agency. I think that's a good move for confidence. Right now he's comfortable. He doesn't have to focus on arbitration hearings or his salary. He's got life-changing money already on the table. He can just go out there and pitch, and I think that's a good thing for the Red Sox future. We've talked about it. It's probably a few years away, but Brian Bello will be on the team for that, and that's important.
Yeah, and it basically, it gives him the control there, and then he still has a chance for free agency. It's not like one of these super long-term deals where, like, you know, player took a lot less money overall because they wanted to get that security now. It's like he bought out, what, one free agency year, I think, potentially. Mm-hmm. Yeah. With that option, it's like he could still hit the market at that time anyways. He guaranteed himself $55 million in the meantime, which is a pretty pretty good amount there, so... that's basically going to wrap up the Red Sox talk here. Let's jump over to our main topic, which is the National League Central outlook for 2024. We'll start with a team that was very weird. I think a lot of us picked them to be really good last year. I think Matt and I don't know if it was Matt and I picked them to win the division.
You did. Cause I picked the Brewers.
I know I did. I don't know if Matt did or not, but
I don't remember if I picked them or the Card or the Brewers, but I was kind of on the borderline between both of them. So
yeah, well, they ended up finishing at 71-91, 21 games back in this division. Let's say we were not close on those at all.
No, you know, I didn't second. So
yeah, the team that obviously they had some stuff that they were dealing with there, but you know, coming into this offseason, they were, I think we had them, man, they're going to get pitching, right? They have to get some sort of pitching. They went out and signed Sonny Gray, and we're like, okay, that's a good start, but you need to do something else. And then they signed Kyle Gibson and Lance Lynn. And we're like, that's not what we meant. We did not mean that. And then they've signed like Matt Carpenter and Brandon Crawford. And we're like, not that either. You know, this is a team like right now we're also going to talk about Sonny Gray, potentially, you know, injured and most likely going to miss opening day here. But I mean, you're talking about a rotation right now. It's Miles Michaelis, Kyle Gibson, Lance Lynn, Steven Matson, Matt Liberatore to start the season out here. We say this joke because I send it in our group chat here, but you know, before I pass to you guys, they're opening the season in 4-game set in Los Angeles against the Dodgers. They might give up 200 runs in those 4 games. You know, David, you know, it's, we have the Cardinals Cubs rivalry here thing, but you know, honestly, what's your look at what this team did in the offseason? Did they improve? Do we expect them to be better than 71-91 going into 2024?
You know, they'll be better, right? It's the Cardinals. I have a hard time believing this team is going to maintain that level of mediocrity that they had last year. Sonny Gray is obviously a huge addition. I think Sonny Gray is maybe one of the more underrated signings. Him hurting his hamstring notwithstanding, like this offseason, they picked him up right at market value for what he was expected to go for. Didn't let him last on the market. And of course, he gets hurt right in the, you know, first little bit of spring training. That's just kind of typical, right? I don't hate the Kyle Gibson signing. Kyle Gibson had one of the nastiest sliders in baseball last year. It's just that his fastball was so horrible. He was giving up, you know, runs on that left and right, but the slider was good enough to get good whiffs. And so, like, as a 5-starter, you're very comfortable with a Kyle Gibson. He's got one pitch. Maybe you change some pitch sequencing. I'm not convinced that the Wilson Contreras-led catching staff is going to make any significant pitching adjustments to Kyle Gibson. I think Kyle Gibson might just be what he is, which is fine, but that's not something to get excited about, right? And then Lance Lynn, is Lance Lynn cooked? I don't know. You think he's cooked. You saw him give up a bunch of home runs in the NLDS, right? So
just a bunch of homers in general.
Yeah, he was very bad. For what the negatives are with this Cardinals team, which is they didn't get any younger. They brought a bunch of veterans in to try and stabilize the clubhouse. Goldschmidt and Arenado are a year older, right? Wilson Contreras' his first year wasn't all that good behind the plate. For all of that, Jordan Walker is a young, pretty good-looking player. Mason Wynn looks like he might break camp with the team. It'll be him or Brandon Crawford at shortstop. He's a very good player. It looks like top 100 prospect. Got another top 100 prospect in Victor Scott, who might be that outfielder that replaces Tommy Edman, who's hurt. Big steals guy, Victor Scott. So, you know, this Cardinals team, they're going to churn out some guys, right? They're going to have their devil magic players you've never heard of before pull up and play well. Right. Lars Nootbaar, losing him bad. They'll bring somebody up who you've never heard of to play good. The question is it going to happen again? Are they going to not be able to find those guys? I just don't think that that's the case. I wouldn't go out of my way to predict this team for the division. I don't think that the deficits of, you know, losing MVP Goldschmidt to what he was last year. And as he's getting older, you know, I don't think that they're going to make that up. The big guys, Goldschmidt, Gorman, Arenado, they're going to make up that deficit, I think, to get back to like an 85-90 win team. I think they'll win 81-84 games. That might be enough for this division. We're going to talk about it. All these teams are going to be in that range. They've done enough, but I don't think they've done everything. I'd give them like a C- for the offseason, and this team scares me.
Yeah, I'd give them... I mean, I think they did improve. I mean, because you basically had a bunch of replacement level pitchers last year, and you've got, you know, Miles Michaelis hopefully rebounds a little bit. He still doesn't, I mean, it's not like his stuff is terrible or anything. He just had a tough year last year. It was kind of a, you know, he was still okay. He threw a lot of innings. He threw over 200 innings, actually. And that's kind of what they prioritized is innings. They're trying to get guys who throw innings. Kyle Gibson last year threw 192 innings. He was actually not as bad. He had a 4.73 ERA, but he only had a 4.13 FIP. You know, he doesn't walk guys, and he doesn't strike out a ton of guys, but he's, you know, he's a pretty good control pitcher. You know, he's fine as a mid to back end, like a number four starter. You know, and then with Sonny Gray coming in there now, you've got Gray, Mikolas, Gibson as your top three, and you feel okay about that. I don't think you feel great about it, but like if that's your top three in your rotation, if they're able to be healthy most of the year, like I know Gray's starting off in the IL, but it's just the hamstring strain, so he should be back, you know, in the next, in the first month. You know, if they should be better in the rotation. I mean, last year's rotation was just, I mean, like Dakota Hudson and a bunch of guys. And you never know about a guy like Liberatore. You know, he was a top prospect that's been injured a bit and hadn't performed at the big league level while performing at the minor league level. You never know when a guy like that might figure it out. And I think their bullpen will cover up some of their starting pitching problems. They've got a pretty good bullpen. Ryan Helsley's a really solid closer. Giovanni Gallegos is a solid setup guy. Kittredge is good. They brought him in. Kenyon Middleton they signed. He had a pretty good year last year. Brought him in. Jojo Romero is a pretty good lefty. You know, their bullpen's pretty deep and pretty solid. And then their lineup should still hit really well. I think they hit pretty well last year. You know, missing Newt Barr at the beginning of the season's not great for them, but at the same time, I mean, you think there might be a little bit of regression from Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado at their age, especially with some of their peripherals as at the plate. But you know, you look at some of these guys like you know, Dylan Carlson maybe has a little bit left in the tank there. Jordan Walker should be better. You know, he's such a young, talented player. Nolan Gorman's probably got room for improvement. So you probably have a similar run scoring offense to what you had last year. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I definitely think this team is, depending on how the clubhouse gels this year, that's probably a pretty big emphasis right now. Depending on how that gels this year, you know, this team probably is, like you said, 85 to 90 wins. I mean, it's probably what they should shoot for. Maybe they might end up being a little bit short of that, but they'll be in contention for the division and maybe a wild card, just depending on how things fall. I mean, there's a world where Lance Lynn doesn't give up as many home runs. I don't think he's going to be great. There's a world where he doesn't give up as many home runs and Mikolas bounces back and Sonny Gray gets healthy and repeats last year and you have like a really good top of your rotation. And then you've got this offense and there's a world where that happens. But there's also a world where all these pitchers that you signed and brought in, they're all veterans, they're all older, all really struggle. And then you have, you know, regression from Goldschmidt and Arenado and some of the young guys don't pick it up and you're really bad. So there's a lot of variance for this team, but I do think they'll win, you know, in that 85 game range. And I mean, they're off season great. I'd give them, I don't know, a C+. I mean, they needed so many pitchers. It was going to be hard for them to go out and spend big on one, you know, but yeah.
Yeah, it's they just feel like a really weird team. They could you don't expect them to be nearly as bad again, but if the pitching that we, you know, if Sonny Gray is, you know, back to being an injury prone pitcher again, not being healthy like he has been the past couple years, if Goldschmidt at 36 keeps declining, or, you know, was that a decline last year, was it a down year, what do we know? You know, you don't know. He's also on his last year of his deal, which isn't talked about enough, I don't think. You know, is Lance Lynn going to stop giving up 40 million homers? You know, is Kyle Gibson going to figure out an off-speed pitch? Like, there's just so many ifs here. Is Steven Matz going to stay healthy? Like, they have some stuff that makes you feel like, okay, they're going to be good. But then there's other things that you're just like, man, I'm so worried about this team. Like, I don't think if you polled 100 people, you might have them finish in every single spot in this division. Yep. Because the right wide range of what they could do to what they, you know, like, you just don't know. We're like, I don't think we've ever had to say that about the Cardinals before. And that's pretty telling.
So Goldschmidt's really interesting. You know, in 2022, his ex-WOBA was 367. 2023, his ex-WOBA was 367.
Yep.
He's the exact same player. He's just over an underperformance due to, you know, just luck and whatever. I mean, his hard hit rate was actually way up this year.
I've seen a note, and remember Pujols was getting the juiced balls. How many of those juiced balls did Paul Goldschmidt get?
Yeah.
Like, that's a pretty reasonable question, I think.
Well, it's hard hitting
the
jump,
the fallout. Yeah, well, yeah, but if he was hitting a, you know, a golf ball versus a waterlogged ball, like, I mean, it doesn't matter how hard you hit it if it's not going as far as the other one did.
So let's jump over to the Pittsburgh Pirates now, who finished 76-86, 16 games back in this division. You know, and they didn't really lose anybody in free agency. They brought back Andrew McCutchen here too. You know, they made a couple signings. They brought in Yasmani Grandal to be their, you know, rotational catcher. I don't know if he's going to start every single day. You know, they lost Andy Rodriguez, who was supposed to be their catcher for Tommy John surgery. He's out for the season. You know, they signed Mitch Keller to that extension. They traded for Marco Gonzalez. They signed Martin Perez, signed Aroldis Chapman as well to try and help that back end of that bullpen. Yeah, they brought some interesting moves here, very Pirates-like moves, you know, some that they're not going to go out there and spend the big, big money. You know, I think the most, like, surprising thing was probably the Mitch Keller extension after being talked about trade deadline last year. And then it kind of, like, was like, hey, they're talking extension, and then, like, the next day it was like, oh, it's done. But this team feels like a team that, you know, they're set up. They have good young players. You're going to get O'Neill Cruz back this year. You have Hayes and Reynolds, you know, locked in. Hayes kind of started proving that he could hit last year. You know, Reynolds, we've seen him do it before too. There are some question marks for sure with this team, but overall, I feel like the Pirates are in a, you know, a solid offseason into an upward kind of trajectory here. We're going to see the next few years, but you know, Matt, what do you think about the Pirates so far?
I mean, they're all right. Like, they're better. I mean, they're not the worst team in baseball. You know, I think part of it probably depends on O'Neill Cruz and if he's able to, you know, he just missed the year of, he's a guy who was really raw coming up, even though his tools are just off the charts, and he just missed the year of development. So at the big league level. So we'll see if he's able to, you know, continue to improve and progress. You know, I think they've got a bunch of guys who are everyday regular type players. Like, they're good big leaguers, but they don't really have much star power. I mean, you know, Brian Reynolds is like a perennial 3-win player. Brian Hayes has the potential to be more than that, but, you know, the way his bat has played, he's been more of like that perennial, like, defense-based 3-win player. Andrew McCutchen can still hit some, get on base a lot, but he's coming off a pretty significant injury at the end of the year last year and is, you know, we'll see how he does. Jack Sawinski is another guy who's got some flaws, but he's like a perennial 2-3 win player. Like, they've got a bunch of those types of guys, and their prospects that have come up have been hit or miss a little bit. Like, Henry Davis has been, he was the first overall pick in the draft. They've been trying to bring him in as their, like, everyday catcher this year, and apparently it hasn't gone super well in camp and stuff. So, you know, they've signed Yasmani Grandal. They might pull him up to be their opening day catcher, which would be interesting. I'm interested to see if Grandal is just cooked or if last year was just an aberration because the White Sox was such a disaster. So that'll be interesting. And then their pitching staff, I mean, the high end of their pitching staff with Mitch Keller, he's pretty solid. But, I mean, Martin Perez is a fine big leaguer. Other than that, I mean, Marco Gonzalez is not very good. Luis Ortiz, not that do anything for me. Jared Jones is kind of interesting. He throws extremely hard. So, you know, he's got control problems, but apparently he's had a fantastic spring. So it'll be interesting to see if he's able to stick in the big league rotation this year and handle it. And their bullpen's pretty good. David Bednar, Aroldis Chapman back into that bullpen, pretty solid. You know, got some other decent guys. Roansy Contreras is a reliever. It interests me a lot. I've always kind of liked his stuff. And we'll see what happens. I think this team has improved over their past, I don't know, 5 years or so. I don't know that they're improved enough to compete for this division. I think they're probably the only team that just has no shot in this division. I mean, it would take a lot of really good fortune. And the thing that worries me a little bit about this team is that they have some really high-end prospects, but they don't have a ton. Like Paul Skeens, he'll come up at some point this year and he'll be, you know, a really good piece of that rotation. But I mean, I don't know, like a lot of their prospects haven't completely panned out, you know, like we would hope. So, you know, they've only got, I think, 3 guys on the top 100. And Paul Skeens is one that he'll be gone off of it pretty soon. But I mean, Bubba Chandler and what's his name? Tamar Johnson are the other ones. So
I think Jared Jones is on there too. He might not be.
I wasn't even thinking of him because I think they said he's going to be in their big league rotation. So I wasn't really even considering him. But yeah, four top 100 prospects for a team that hasn't won like 70 games. And Priester's no longer. He's graduated and he was awful in the big leagues. I mean, he might end up figuring it out, but he had a rough year in the big leagues. But I mean, a lot of their guys, like Indy Rodriguez, got hurt. Nick Gonzalez didn't pan out like they hoped. Henry Davis looks like a DH only, and we don't know if his bat's even good enough for that. I mean, there's a lot of problems with this rebuild they've had. The thing is that they have developed enough to where if they were a big market team, they could supplement this core. But they just, I don't know if, you know, like if they went out and signed Snell and Montgomery tomorrow to go with their rotation, I don't think they'd win the division.
Yeah.
They're still pretty far behind.
Let it be known, I am a Henry Davis believer. I think Henry Davis can hit at the major league level. I think he will be able to do it. It's development isn't linear, right? You don't just, if you're good, you come up and hit. Henry Davis came up and struggled last year, but he's been like a 180 WRC plus hitter at every other level he's ever played at. And it's taken him time to get to that level too, at multiple different levels. Like double A, his first trip through double A, he's like sub 100 WRC plus. Second trip through, 180. I think he can hit. I don't know if he can catch. You know, if he can even give them 50 games behind the plate, I think that's more than sufficient. Right, if he can just be a part-time catcher, like a Mitch Garver catcher for this Pirates team, I think that would be very useful, especially going forward. If he could be adapted to that part-time catcher role, I think that would be their kind of preference. But
let me clarify what I was saying. I think he can hit. I don't think he can hit at the level to not be a catcher. Like, I don't think, like, he'd have to put up a, as the number one overall pick, he'll be disappointing if he can't catch. Because if he puts up a 120 WRC plus as a DH or a bad corner outfielder, like, that's not going to be worth the number one pick in the draft. If he puts up a 120 WRC plus, 130 WRC plus, and he's a catcher, and he's an average defensive catcher, then that is totally worth the number one pick in the draft. So we'll see what happens with him, but I just wanted to clarify that because I don't mean he's a bad hitter and he will never hit. Like, that's not what I was kind of meaning. I meant, like, if he's basically a above average but not elite hitter, he's going to have to catch, and I don't think he can catch.
Yeah, the question is there for catcher, for Henry Davis for sure, but I do think he can slot into that Mitch Garver role, which is a very valuable player. So with that, you know, you've got, I think Rowdy Tellez has a little bit more, in him, right? I think Rowdy Tellez he came off a really bad year last year with the Brewers. It's not good. But 2 years ago, he had 38 home runs for the Brewers. I think that's a really good reclamation project for this Pirates team. I think Andrew McCutchen's going to be just fine there. I would love to see McCutchen stay his whole entire career with the Pirates here and finish it off, retire, walk off into the sunset with a good season, right?
Yeah.
I really like Brian Reynolds as a guy who can potentially, who could be a bet. Like, if you could move Brian Reynolds away from that like three spot in the lineup, I really like Brian Reynolds, right? But him and O'Neill Cruz have to carry this lineup, and that's just not enough. Unless Henry Davis and Rowdy Tellez just pick it back up to being what they were in double A and in 2022 respectively. Right.
Yeah. And like you said, that's where my concerns are with this roster, mm-hmm, because I just don't think that their high end players are high end enough to carry a team, and they don't have enough depth for it to not matter. I mean,
mm-hmm,
they like Brian Reynolds, if he's a 6-win player again, but the last 2 years he's been a 2.8, 2.3, and he's a mm-hmm solid but not elite hitter. Like, O'Neill Cruz has a chance to be that high end. But, you know, there's still a lot of question marks there. I love O'Neill Cruz, and he looks awesome, and he's fun to watch and everything. But, you know, there's questions there. He's still, mm-hmm, you know,
how's that year out going to impact him?
And a year out, he only played 9 games last year. He only played 80. He's only played like 90 big league games. And it's, you know, will be interesting.
this is kind of the de facto basement team. I do want to point out that David Bednar has been one of the best relief pitchers in baseball for three seasons. Yep. And it's not really that like far-fetched to say he's one of the best relievers in baseball right now. And the NL Central might have the best relief group of any division that we've covered. Between Bednar, we just talked about Ryan Helsley and Gallegos. We're going to get to a few more good ones. Like, this is a good Evan crop Williams, of relievers. Yeah. Like, David Bednar, last three seasons, is exactly the same guy every year. He's a below 2.5 ERA guy with a FIP to match, and he picks up save after save for this Pirates team. And when they win a little bit more, like they did last year, he picks up 39 saves. Right? So, I mean, this is a lockdown, chaotic back-end guy. I really like him. I really think if he was on a different team, we'd be talking about him like we talk about Edwin Diaz or some of these other, you know, elite relievers. He'd have that like Craig Kimbrel pedigree, and he doesn't have that because he plays on the Pirates. So I do want to bring him up.
Another guy the Padres dropped for no reason.
Yeah, love the Padres. That's but
old AJ Preller.
With that, I mean the offseason grade, I'd give him a D plus, right? I mean, like you said, but there's not a whole lot this team can do. They're not going to spend like one of those big market teams. And even if they had, not sure that changes anything either.
Yeah, I give them a C plus. I think that extending Mitch Keller was a good move for them. He's an established big league pitcher that could be a part of their future contention window now. And he was pretty close to free agency too. So they bought out a pretty good bit of free agency from him. And then, you know, I like some of the reclamation projects. Like you mentioned, Rowdy Tellez. That's a guy that I really liked going into last year. And I don't know that he's going to be good. But, you know, he's worth a try for them. And Yasmani Grandal, I think, is definitely worth a shot for them. I mean, I don't know. He might just be totally cooked. But, I mean, there was a lot of weird stuff going on with the White Sox last year. So you just never know if he might be, you know, at least not cooked, you know, where like he might have looked last year. So I thought those were and then the oldest Chapman's a guy that if he throws like he did in the first half of the season last year, or really all season last year, he had a little bit of bad luck when he was with the Rangers. But if he throws like that again, then they can get a real prospect for him at the deadline, or if somehow they are in some form of contention, they could, you know, it's a good signing. So that's another one that I really like.
Yeah, I wouldn't think this team is going to be like a high percentage chance to win this division. It might even be zero. I'd say maybe, you know, below 5%, right? Yeah. But they could finish anywhere from second to fifth in this division. I think that's the more interesting piece of it, is if they're just everybody's beating up on each other in this division and the Pirates win 80 games again, you're not going to be surprised. But I think things have to go right. The young guys, Termar, Jones, Skeens have to be really good in order for that to happen. O'Neill Cruz too. So, you know, we'll stop with the Pirates talk, but they're a really interesting team. They're just never going to take that next step unless ownership changes what they do.
They're far more interesting than they have been since the year that they traded for Archer and torpedoed their rebuild. they've been really interesting. This is the first time they've been interesting since then.
Right. And this I don't think they'll be a basement team in Major League Baseball. They might be top 10 in the draft next year, and they might be basement in this division, but I don't think they're going to win less than 70 games.
Probably right.
Let's move to the Reds. We lost Damian, unfortunately. The internet issues killed our live stream. They've killed everything right now. It has been horrible. We soldier on. Let's talk about the Reds. They had a really surprising year last year, I think. And, you know, they added Jamer Candelario, Tony Kemp, Frankie Montas, Nick Martinez, Emilio Pagan, and Brent Suter to a team that won 82 games last year. Is that enough to push them up to contender in this division?
Yeah, I think it is, because I think with the reason being, I like some of their signings, but also just they have so many young players. The development of those young players is going to be very big for them. You know, like Ellie De La Cruz, Matt McClain. There's a lot of room for development from Ellie De La Cruz. There were a lot of people talking about him last year, but he was really still figuring things out at the big league level. you know, CES, Christian Encarnacion Strand, Spencer Steer, or another couple of really young guys who can continue to get better. You know, they still have, you know, there's the big news this week with Noel V. Marte getting his, you know, getting a PED suspension. He's going to miss the first 80 games of this season. So that's a big hit to them, but it makes that signing of Jamer Candelario a lot more important for them. And honestly, Jamer Candelario is he's more valuable as a third baseman because he can, because his value is in being a good defensive third baseman who can hit pretty well, more so than, you know, I don't think he's a great hitter for first base. You know, I don't think he's good enough to hit at hitting for first base consistently. So I think that was, you know, that was a good move to you know, have him in and be able to play him at third. And then, you know, you still got India and Tyler Stevenson there. And then I like the pitching, that they brought in as, and one thing that you've got to remember with this team is that last year their pitching staff was terrible in the starting rotation, but they were badly injured last year. Yeah. You know, Hunter Green missed a lot of time. Nick Lodolo missed a lot of time.
He's still out.
Yeah, he's still out. I think he's coming back pretty early, though. But if you can get those two guys healthy, like, they were both talent-wise, like, two – I won't call them number ones. I think they both have the talent to be number ones, especially Green. I don't think they are quite there yet, but they're at least, like, very good big league starters who are, like, mid-rotation guys right now. And then you brought in Frankie Montas coming off of his injury, and I actually like that signing. It's a true one-year deal. It's not like the Giolito deal or the, you know, some of these that have been 1 year with an option, with a player option and stuff. Like, it's a true one-year deal. They can get out of it after this year, and it's I really like that because you've got a you know, you've got a guy who last time he was fully healthy, 2021, 2022, he was close to an ace. And then he got traded to the Yankees and started dealing with the injuries. So, you know, and he's looked really good this spring. He got named the opening day starter today, which was pretty hard to believe. But and then their bullpen, I think, is fine. Alexis Diaz is solid as a closer. You know, they've got some interesting guys in that bullpen other than him. You've got, you know, Emilio Pagan's interesting. His stuff seems like it would be really good. He's given up a lot of home runs in his career. You know, they might be able to change something in his pitch mix, or, you know, maybe change the shape of his fastball or something to help that. You know, they've got some solid guys there, and, you know, there's still some guys on the way in their system. You know, Rhett Lauder's a guy to look out for late this year, as being a first round draft pick last year that, you know, out of college that could move really fast. He's somebody to kind of look out for. Cam Collier's another guy to kind of look out for in the future, but you know, I think they've got a really solid group, you know, for this year, and I think there's a lot of upside with them as a team that could, if some of these pieces continue to develop and the pitching, you know, stays healthy, works out, they could be, I don't think they're going to win the division, but they could have a chance. They have a chance to win the division,
right? I think that's the big key for the Reds, right? This isn't a group that's going to go out there and, you know, blow you away with free agent signings. They've got to kind of do things at the margins. And I think they had some real success, right, on the margins. You know, the big splash was Candelario. Candelario's had 2.117 or 1.19, you know, 1.20-ish WRC plus seasons with 3 WAR at third base, right? It was last year and it was 2 years ago when he led the American League in doubles. And I think that's the true player of Candelario. Maybe you might give him like a projection of a little worse, right? Like a 110 WRC plus, but he can play third base, right? You stick him in there every day. He plays third base as a switch hitter and you let him go, right? He struggled with some injuries. He struggled with the Detroit Tigers pitching or hitting staff, which, you know, who hasn't, right? But the big splash being Candelario really, he takes the place of Joey Votto in this roster, right? Is the veteran player who's been on, you know, a number of different teams and organizations in his career. He's going to give that leadership. And then you've got a bunch of young guys, right? Young guys fire. They don't know failure. They don't know what's going on. Now, I'm not going to predict TJ Friedl to replicate. I want to say he had 3 wins above replacement last year. I'm not going to predict him to do that again. 4.4, sorry. 4.4, yeah. I lied. It was more. TJ Friedel was insanely good last year. I'm not going to predict him to do that again. Now, he might do that again. He might just be that guy, but I kind of doubt it. That's almost like Corbin Carroll level of a center fielder. And I think Friedel's going to be more like a two war, you know, maybe a leadoff hitter type who steals a bunch of bases, but he had like 18 home runs on top of that. Like, that's crazy.
I think he's Ender Inciarte.
Yeah, he might be Inciarte, but that's a good player, right? Yeah. Like, that's enough. You know, even if he's not as good as he was last year, that's fine, right? Because I think Christian Encarnacion Strand is a really good hitter, and he might not be able to play any sort of defense. He might be a DH, but I think Encarnacion Strand can mash the ball. You know, those are guys that aren't talked about as much. I think Spencer Steer is another one who's, he's just a really good left-handed hitter. The question is, we see it a lot. Are these, some of these guys, they come up, they hit really good right at the start with the Reds, and then they flame out really fast. We've seen it a number of times over the years. Are any of these guys going to flame out quick? You know, Jonathan India is even one where he's talked about getting traded because he hasn't hit since his first year. Like, what do you do if you're the Reds? You've got so many guys. The other guy I want to bring up, with regard to this Reds group that might be an impact that you didn't mention, was Chase Petty. It was the return for what's his name?
Tyler Molly.
Molly, that's it. For the Twins, right? So Chase Petty and Lauder are the two really good pitching prospects for this team, and that goes along with Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo, right? That's a lot of homegrown young pitching talent on top of Andrew Abbott, who can throw 100 miles an hour, but it's like right down the middle. That guy has a very bad fastball shape, and I don't know what they're going to do about that because he gives up all the home runs.
You talk about Ashcraft?
No, I didn't. And all the Reds pitchers throw 100 miles an hour.
Well, Graham Ashcraft does too. I thought you were talking about Ashcraft because he throws 100 miles an hour, but he gets rocked.
No, Andrew Abbott has the worst lefty fastball shape I've ever seen in my life. Abbott's a lefty, so the good part for him is that he can kind of get some more outs via the off-speed stuff against the left-handers who would normally just destroy. Ashcraft is a righty, and they have the same problem, and they're pitching in, you know, Coors Light, right? The band box over there in Cincinnati.
Yeah, and Abbott was pretty good last year too.
Right.
You know,
I found myself excited when he would pitch against the Cubs. They were rocking.
My 93 mile an hour fastball, who has bad shape, is not going to cut it consistently. So
once Abbott's the kind of guy who could very well wind up being a really good player, and you know, I'm fully on board with one of these Reds players figuring it out and just having some kind of Cy Young level season.
Yeah.
Which one is it? Don't know. When is it going to happen? Don't know. They have to navigate that ballpark, and that's going to be the struggle.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the Reds, for as weird as their organization is at times, and for as poor as they performed the big league level for the last several years, I mean, they've done a pretty good job of pitching development and fixing guys. Yep. And I mean, Sonny Gray went there from New York and turned his whole career around. I mean, Luis Castillo was not a top 100 prospect, and they figured out a way to turn him into an ace. You know, you look at Tyler Molly, was not a top 100 prospect, and he turned into a really solid starter for them that they were able to get a lot back from. Trevor Bauer went there, and say what you want to about him, but he was like the nastiest pitcher
in the
league.
They knew how to give him strider tack.
In general, like, he did really well with that team and nobody else. Of course, everyone used a spider attack there, and he was still better than everyone else. So, I mean, that was a very, you know, that they've been pretty good at pitching development. So I wouldn't be shocked if they could figure out how to get a guy like Hunter Green to take the next step, guy like Nick Lodolo, and reshape Abbott and his fastball. And you never know with Ashcraft. I mean, anytime a guy throws as hard as him, you just never know. But it's going to be interesting. I think this team is very interesting. I looked at the playoff odds, 30% playoff odds, and that's exactly what I was kind of thinking it would be, like just somewhere where they could make it. I don't think that it's super likely, but it's not, you know, I think they're going to be similar to last year in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I don't know that this team has – It's better than last year, but is their competition better than last year too? Right.
It's something I'll say, I said it about, I think, the Mariners maybe last year, where I said this team might be better, but the results might not be better because they'll regress a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Just they had a really magical year last year to get to where they were at, you know, 82-80 or whatever they ended up. You know, you could see them win a few fewer games, but still be a better team just off of, you know, fortune in close games, you know, BABIP regression, like stuff like that. They could perform better as a team, but not win as many games this year.
Yeah. They might also get 15 homers and 20 stolen bases from Jake Fraley. And the other one I was checking was, I think, Stuart Fairchild. It might be Will Benson, who was the other random outfielder they had that
Will
was
Benson
really good.
Was, yeah. He had a couple walk-off home runs for him.
Yep. It's a, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they had the same record, right? But I just, it would be out of their control. I think like, run differential-wise, they would be a better team. And it would just have been, look, you're playing a bunch of teams that are, like, you're not beating up on the Cardinals anymore, who were 70-win team. Like, they're not going to be a 70-win team again this year. You know, something's going different. But, you know, there's a lot of guys who are regression candidates. Right. And so if the Brewers come back to 80 wins, if everybody in this division has, like, right around 80 wins, like, who's going to win the division? Let's go to the next team in the division, which would be my Cubs, coming off of last year. 83 wins. They lose out Marcus Stroman. We just mentioned Jamer Candelario. And then the rest of their losses were all gains for the team. They were all, like, negative players. Like, it was horrible. Trey Mancini, Tucker Barnhart, Shane Green. Why were those guys on the team? Who knows? It's fine. They re-signed the one important player, Cody Bellinger. Beyond that, they also acquired Michael Bush and Yency Almonte in a trade with the Dodgers for Jackson Ferris and Zaire Hope. They have signed Garrett Cooper, who looks kind of good in spring, and I kind of like him.
I like Garrett Cooper.
Yeah. He's an Auburn guy.
I was going to say, he used to torment the Braves, though, when he was with the Marlins. Like, he's a good player.
Yep. They signed Shota Imanaga from Japan. Lefty, definitely not the best Japanese pitcher that'll come out this year, but maybe he will be. Who knows? They also signed Hector Neris. So the Cubs were active this offseason. But until Cody Bellinger got signed, it did not feel like this was a better team than it was last year. Now that Cody is on the team again, it feels like a better team. I think they've got a better direction. The farm system looks insane. But can they win the division in 2024? That's the big question.
Yeah, and I guess I can start with a lot of it. This team last year, I thought all year was overperforming. I thought they were not as talented as they played. I thought they had a really good outcome from Cody Bellinger. His expected numbers, he outperformed. We've talked all about it. We don't have to go into it. But and then you had, you know, you had some other guys too, like Christopher Morel played pretty well. Mike Tauchman played like a big leaguer. You know, and your pitching staff too. You had Justin Steele, you know, pitched really, really. I mean, he was like a Cy Young candidate all year. And you had bounce backs from some guys like Kyle Hendricks and Marcus Stroman for the first half was really good. And they won a lot of games. They won a lot of. They had a good run differential. So I don't think it was lucky that they won. I just think that they had some, you know, good fortune, good outcomes. They had like a bunch of 80th percentile outcomes from different players. So that was the case. And I think they're a little bit better this year. They really brought back a similar lineup to what they had last year. You know, adding Michael Bush, we'll see how he does. That's going to be one that's very, very interesting to me because the Dodgers are it's weird with guys coming from the Dodgers because their Pacific Coast League team has so many guys absolutely raking on it because that league is just insane offensively. But the Dodgers said as an organization, they have a lot of prospects. Gavin Lux is another example of a guy who came up and it just was a decent hitter. And Michael Bush really needs to rake to be a worth it major league player. And I think he can. He's got the prospect pedigree. And it's going to be a very interesting kind of a swing guy to me for them. Can Christopher Morel handle third base all year? That's another thing that's interesting.
Huge.
And I think that the biggest question mark I have, though, I think they'll score a pretty good amount of runs. They're gonna have they have a lot of good on base type guys in their lineup too. Ian Happ, Nico Horner, both pretty good on base guys. Seiya Suzuki's a solid on base guy. Bellinger can be a really good on base guy. I think the big question mark for them is gonna be the pitching. I think Justin Steele is really good. I don't think he was as good as he was last year. I think he really over. And you kind of saw it at the very end of the season last year a little bit. I think he might have been dealing with a little bit of injury too. But you know, he's that was like a 90th percentile season for him. I think he's a really good pitcher, and he's definitely worthy of having in a top end of your rotation. But I don't think he's going to throw to a 3 ERA again this year. I think he might be more like a 3.5 type guy. And then behind him, you have Imanaga coming over, who some people really, really like, and some people are kind of iffy on him. He's on a great contract. It was a very good signing, I think. And it'll be interesting to see what he does. I mean, you just never know in the first year with some of these Japanese guys coming over how quickly they adjust. There's a lot of questions. And then you got, you know, your other guys. I really don't believe very much in Kyle Hendricks anymore. I know he had a little bit of a bounce back last year, but I mean, I just don't believe in that stuff anymore. And then Jameson Taillon, I don't know what I heard something the other day about him he has some form of injury. And then
back injury.
Back?
Yep.
So I don't know how long that'll have him out for, but I mean, it's unfortunate. I really hate to see that happen to Jameson Taillon because of all the things he's dealt with in his career. He's a cancer survivor, and it really sucks to see him deal with that. But, you know, the rest of the rotation, I mean, you've got a bunch of young guys, and that's the thing I like them. Oh, and the bullpen is
– it's interesting.
I don't like the bullpen at all. I mean, I'm sorry.
Well, you're seeing the look. Adbert Alzola is a good bullpen pitcher.
I think
he's a
good fine.
Reliever.
Yeah, he's a solid reliever. I think Julian Merriweather's a solid reliever that they were able to get
they
off
figured
of
him out.
Scrap heap. I not believe in Hector Neris.
Right, and you're not a Neris guy.
I don't even somewhat believe in Drew Smyly.
Well,
I
now,
do not. I don't
if,
really.
If Talon is hurt, Drew Smiley's in the rotation, which that
boy,
is
I don't,
frightening.
Okay, or Assad. I have heard good things about Kwas.
Right.
So
Kwas was the guy they got for Nelson Velasquez. He's interesting sidewinder guy, Darren O'Day throwing style. They've got a big sweeper with a big break. They might have something there, but David Ross threw him like 20 times in like 30 days down the stretch, and he got lit up, and everybody hates him now. Yeah. I think he could be fine used in the right role. And I'll tell you, the one thing that you didn't mention, and that I didn't mention at the beginning of this, was that the Cubs are not being managed by David Ross anymore.
That's true.
And that is a huge change, in my opinion, because just from what I've seen early on, the immediacy to choose the direction with Christopher Morel and the belief that he can, you know, putting the full weight behind him that, look, you can make some mistakes, you can make some bad throws, but as long as you are learning and growing, we're going to keep riding that potential wave. Craig Counsell has been very clear with his roles, with his expectations with these guys. They all have said that they really like everything that he's doing right now. He's not said anything wrong that I've seen in the media. I've never had anything bad to say about him so far. Did not expect for Craig Counsell to maybe be the biggest influence on this team this year, but he kind of looks like it. I'm really excited to see what he can do, because what's he going to do with the lineup? We saw David Ross hit Nico Horner leadoff all season. Is that really the best use of Nico Horner's high contact, low on base skills? Not sure it is. So can Craig Counsell get Ian Happ to buy into leadoff, right? Because Ian Happ's a high walk guy who doesn't really perform all that well with runners on base. Put Ian Happ in the leadoff spot. Let him walk and get on in front of, you know, the power guys. That seems like a good move. But David Ross couldn't get Ian Happ to buy in. Or didn't try. So that's my big note there. I do think Neris is a big question mark, right? He was really good with the Astros. Who knows? But in terms of the bullpen, they're going to need to find somebody else. I was thinking they were going to make a trade for a big closer, maybe Tanner Scott. They just haven't done it. They've got the pieces. I don't know what the holdup is, you know?
It's going to be tough to trade for somebody like that, who's an established closer on a team that is, I mean, the Marlins were in the playoffs last year. I don't think they're tanking. Right. Like, they're not. Right. I don't think they're, like, super aggressive competing, but they're not tanking. So it's going to be tough to get a guy like that. But, yeah, I mean, I like this team. I think the biggest thing with the Cubs, I don't know if you'll agree, I think they're somewhat in contention for the division here. I think they're, you know, top two, top three in this division. I'm pretty sure. I think the big thing is just that this is probably, they're not a World Series contender this year, unless, you know, you never know when you get in the playoffs, somebody can randomly get hot. But if there's out of the National League, I'd say they're like the ninth most likely team to win the World Series this year out of the National League, but like out of baseball.
In the overall, that's fine. Yeah,
they're the 10th best team in baseball, 10th or 12th, somewhere in there. Like, you know, if things go right. The big thing to me is, though, just the farm system is really good. They've done a great job with their retool. Mm-hmm. I think that Theo Epstein really kind of mismanaged the last few years there. And he's a very good GM, but to put a team together that can win. But he just doesn't do things that are sustainable. Everywhere he's been turned into a disaster when he left. So I think that, you know, they rebuilt the farm system. They let some of those contracts expire, the bad contracts that they had, like Hayward and some of those guys. And then, you know, they brought in, you know, their farm system. They've drafted pretty well. And, I mean, they've done pretty well in trades and in acquiring guys that, you know, guys like Kevin Alcantara, Pete Crow Armstrong. I mean, they traded the tail end of that 2016 World Series team for guys who really have panned out as far as going from being like borderline top 100 prospects to being like top 30 prospects. Mm-hmm. And you know, we remember we had a lot of discussion about, you know, Yu Darvish trade is another one. We had a lot of discussion about, you know, the quantity versus quality thing. And they went out and they just got a ton of quantity of guys who they thought had really high upside and not necessarily guys who were like top 20 prospects. And it's worked, man. It really has. They've got a great farm system. I think they're going to be this year. I think in the next two or three years, they're going to be back in that World Series contention type thing, which, I mean, the NL Central needs it. Like, we need a third division in the, you know, it's not fun to watch the Central divisions just get absolutely blasted every year. So it'll be interesting. I think this year's team is pretty interesting, you know. I don't know if I'll pick them to win the division, but they're at least I'd give them like a 40% playoff chance this year or something. Like, that's probably what I would put on it.
Yeah, I feel very similarly, right? And, you know, I'll try to cut my any sort of additional Cubs rants short, but I am really hyped for Michael Busch. I was on Michael Busch draft night as being the guy I wanted. I think the Cubs went with Ryan Jensen. So that worked out great.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's one of those where, you know, to have, I just hope Bush's swing looks really good. He's hitting in spring training right now, which it doesn't mean a whole lot, but I just want him to be in the right process and the right mindset to take on the season. That's a guy who's bad. I believe in, I've believed in for years. You know, I don't think he'll get to whatever absurd numbers he got to last year, but he did cut his strikeout rate by 10% last year in the minor leagues. And then his 80-ish plate appearances with the Dodgers were broken up over three stints that he was just replacing somebody, and a lot of them were pinch hit at bats, right? Which is just a different – you're going against relievers at that point. It's a different, you know, a plate appearance, plate approach and everything. So, yeah, I think given the runway, he's going to get effectively a full season. I don't think there's any way they won't just give him leeway from opening day. If he struggles, he'll have to hit his way out of it. There's very little pressure behind him at first base. Matt Mervis was not good, and I don't think the Cubs believe in him very much. So because they went out and got Michael Busch. So my assumption is Busch has just got this job. He's just going to have it for the whole season, and they're going to see what happens. And then Christopher Morel, he's got it for a while, I think, at least till June, probably, to run with third base. If he's got 20 throwing errors by June, then we'll have to move on, right? It's going like that. That's what it's going to be. But I think the clear direction with these guys is something that they have not had, where last year, instead of bringing Matt Mervis up and just saying, it's your first base job, they went and signed Trey Mancini, and then Trey Mancini was horrible, and then, you know, now you're on the hook for $7 million this year.
Forget that could have been one.
Which
Eric Hosmer.
Eric Hosmer. Yeah, they were bringing in first baseman all over the place instead of just giving it to Mervis. And maybe Mervis isn't good, but then you know, right? Yeah. And so they're doing a much better job, I think, of providing runway for these young players, because they provided runway for Miguel Amaya, who is now going to probably be the heir apparent to Yan Gomes at catcher. He young guy, looks really good, very composed behind the plate, hits enough, right, yeah, as a catcher. You know, it, Garrett Cooper's a really good little non-roster invite signing, but you're not committing $7 million over 2 years to a Garrett Cooper, right? That already feels better than the Trey Mancini type of deal. And they've been, like, smarter this offseason with those types of moves. And then, you know, on top of all that, right, the prospects look so, so exciting. Matt Shaw's banging down the door. Pete Carl Armstrong is an incredible fielder. If he can hit even a little bit, he's going to be so good. And Cade Horton is a monster.
He's solid.
He throws 97 with an 80 grade sweeper. So, and they've said he's been developing his changeup. I wouldn't be surprised if Cade Horton is the best homegrown pitcher that I've ever seen as a Cubs fan, and that would be since Mark Pryor probably. So
they haven't had a pitcher. Since Mark
Pryor, Kyle Hendricks would be the only one, and I just want to say,
I don't even know if you can count him.
Yeah, because they traded for him from the Rangers. Justin Steele's homegrown, right? But
yeah,
Steele took a long time, right? He's, I think, already 29, and he's only in his third year. So, not quite the same. And we're talking like drafted as a top prospect, zipped up to the big leagues, and became a great pitcher immediately. Haven't had that, right? And
yeah,
I want to just note, I believe in Kyle Hendricks. I'll always believe in Kyle Hendricks. He should never leave the Cubs, ever, even if they just hire him to be a coach. And that sinker be sinking. Like, that's just all it is the sinker be sinking. He's a guy with great command. If he keeps the ball down, they just don't seem to be able to hit it out. He'll give up a home run or two. It is what it is. I'm not going to fret over Kyle Hendricks having like a 4 ERA, but that's... he's been really good for a long time. He had an injury issue with the shoulder. He's back last year. He was fine. As long as Kyle Hendricks doesn't hurt himself, which with such a low effort delivery, he's not going to hurt himself probably. So I feel good. I feel good about him.
Yeah. The one last thing I'll add here with their offseason is that I think they did a really nice job of adding depth to this roster, where I don't know how much upside the high end of this roster has this year, but I don't think there's a lot of ways for it to just totally fail. Like, yeah, I think it's going to be an 80 to 88 win team. And just because, like, if Michael Bush doesn't work out, well, you've got a platoon of Garrett Cooper and Dom Smith. Like,
or say, Matt Mervis, but yeah.
Or Matt Mervis, if Matt Mervis figures it
or
out.
Or PCA in center, Cody at first. They got a lot of ways.
Yeah, well, I mean, they got Bush. That starts as Bush at DH. That's what I was kind of talking about.
Okay, gotcha.
Because
they
have Talkman instead of it. Talkman sucks, and Bellinger goes to the center. Then you've got
you can't diss the summer of Mike Talkman. He is exactly what they signed him to be, which is a bench player. And David Ross let him off all the time.
Oh, I know he did.
And I did not like that. Yep. But I like Mike Talkman as a nice little nine hitter bench center fielder. Yeah. Beautiful player. Love that guy. But
we'll see. We'll see what happens with him. I think it's going to be an interesting team. And I would definitely put they're under consideration for me to be the pick for the division. I haven't decided who I think is going to win this division yet, but they're definitely in the consideration.
The big key for them will be the trade deadline, right? I mean, if they're up in there in the division, they've got the pieces to go get anybody in baseball. And, you know, it might hurt, but we might have figured out third base by then, and Matt Shaw is suddenly on the table for whatever it could be, right? So, you know, we don't know what that's going to entail yet. And I think that's why they haven't signed a Blake Snell or a Jordan Montgomery to round out that rotation, like you said, with where it needs an extra arm. I agree, but that's probably why they haven't done any of those.
I don't think that, and they might change their mind on it, but I don't think
they go over the luxury tax if they sign
I don't think
somebody.
They want to sign a bad contract, though, is the thing. Even if it
those
is
guys are going to get 1 year deals at this point.
Well, they're going to get 3 year deals with opt outs. And the problem is that if Blake Snell regresses or gets injured, then you've torpedoed your next 2 years. Like, with you know, with $20 million on the books that for, you know, so
Smiley's coming off the books next year. It's fine.
Well,
but, all right, let's, we'll see. We'll move on from the Cubs. I could talk about them all day. We'll move on from them. We'll go over to the 2023 Central champion Brewers, who had an offseason to forget. They lost Craig Counsell. They traded away Corbin Burns. They lost, well, they re-signed Brandon Woodruff, did not lose him to free agency. They also re-signed Wade Miley. But beyond that, didn't do a whole lot. Their big off-season acquisitions were Reese Hoskins for 2 years, 17 a year. I think he gets an opt-out after the first.
Yes,
and then a big extension for Jackson Chourio, their number one prospect that will start in center field opening day. They also signed Gary Sanchez after a few adventures. Matt, what's up with the Brewers? Because, you know, they might take a step back, but how far back is that step going to be?
They're interesting. I think that the Brewers are weird because last year they were this team that they couldn't hit. They were great pitching, good run prevention. I think they're going to hit a little bit this year, a little bit more than they did last year. There was, you know, Christian Yelich had his big bounce back last year. You really didn't have a great year from Willy Adames, which was a lot of it was luck based too, with his BABIP being really low, and he just had a rough year. I don't think he's going to be. I think he's going to be a lot better than he was last year. And you had a breakout from William Contreras. He kind of broke out in 2022 with the Braves, where he had a really good season then, and all-star and everything. He had a elite season last year for a catcher. I think he was the best catcher in baseball by WAR. He had 5.4 Fangraphs WAR. His defense really took that leap.
Yep.
That the Brewers have apparently gotten really good at coaching catchers somehow. Like, for whatever reason, catchers go there, and whether it's William Contreras or Omar Narvaez, I remember when he was there, he was awesome. Like, Yasmani Grandal, of course, he was kind of awesome at the Dodgers too, but he was awesome there. I mean, they have done a fantastic job of taking okay catchers and turning them into elite defensive catchers, and that's what William Contreras was last year. He was awesome. They signed Reese Hoskins, which was really interesting. He's a guy that has, you know, a lot of talent. He's a big bopper, and they needed that big bopper in their lineup. And then they got a bunch of young guys. And there's a world where, like, Sal Frelick and Jackson Chourio and Joey Ortiz and these guys kind of take off this year, and this offense ends up being really good. I really like Jackson Chourio, of course, but I do like Sal Frelick. He's gotten a little bit of hate for whatever reason. He doesn't hit the ball super hard, but I really like the on-base skills that he brings. And I don't think he's going to be like a 20 power guy or something. Like, I think he's going to be a hit over power, but I think he is going to hit for some power. I like him a lot. You know, Joey Ortiz is going to be interesting to see how they handle that position, handle him. They have another prospect named Tyler Black, who has gotten a lot of buzz as a guy that might break with the opening day roster and be in their lineup early. I know they like him a lot. And then the pitching staff is not as good as it was last year, of course. When you lose Corbin Burns, you know, that's bad. Now, Freddy Peralta is a really good pitcher. I don't think people really remember him being as good as he is, just because, like, he was overshadowed by their top two in that rotation. So I really like Freddy Peralta. I think he could have a big year. I think the really big – and Wade Miley's just going to be a solid pitcher. Like, I don't think he's going to be some, like, super good pitcher, but he's going to be solid. I think the real kind of swing guy here that could really take them to be, like, back in that contention level would be DL Hall. Is he able to figure out the control and stay healthy? Because they want him to start, and his stuff is totally good enough to start, but the control's been a problem and injuries have been a problem. So if he puts – there's a world where DL Hall puts up a Corbin Burns-type year. Like, he's got that kind of stuff, but – at the same time, he's just – there's a lot of question marks there about that. And worst case for him is elite reliever, I mean, I think. But
yeah.
I think that's the most likely case is reliever. But they're going to give him a chance to start. They don't have a ton of pitching depth. I don't think Brandon Woodruff will come back at all this year.
Not supposed to.
Yeah, I don't know if they've totally ruled him out for, like, a September return or something, but I kind of doubt he comes back. You know, they've still got a couple other guys like Aaron Ashby and Robert Gasser are guys that they like. Apparently, Robert Gasser was throwing like 98 in spring training, which I'm pretty sure he was like a low 90s guy before he got there. They do a good job with pitching development. And then their bullpen is really good. I mean, Devin Williams, close to the best closer in baseball. I mean, the guy throws an elite screwball and while throwing like 98. Trevor McGill's a solid reliever. Joel Piamps was really good last year. Abner Uribe is nasty.
Yeah, that's the guy.
Last year, Hobie Milner's a really good situational lefty they have. Bryce Wilson's brother's about to get drafted. That's kind of cool. Peyton Wilson, he's going to be a high draft pick in the NFL. I mean, this team is – the Brewers are going to brewer where they're going to be better than you think they are, and they're going to be – I don't think I'll pick them to win the division either, but they'll be in that, you know, 80 win. They'll be about a 500 team. And I think they should have been a 500 team last year. They just overperformed a little bit.
Yeah. And I think where the Reds, I feel like the Reds and the Cubs, I feel like stayed very similar to the way they were last year. The Brewers got significantly worse on most fronts and probably are about the same quality team overall that they were last year, right? This is a group. They're bringing up Jackson Chourio, right? They're bringing in Reese Hoskins. That's pretty much all their big changes. I mean, maybe Joey Ortiz, maybe DL Hall, and they lose Corbin Burnes and Craig Counsell. Those are big changes. But again, I think this is a team with a floor 75 wins, maybe. Like, you know, be enough out of it at the deadline that they trade. Maybe Peralta, but probably Adames. And then, you know, they roll with the rest of those guys and those young guys in all those spots. You know, I wonder whether Bryce Turang can hit. He was a guy who came up and that was really well lauded and played really good defense at second base, but he wasn't really that good of a hitter.
They're crazy if they trade Freddy Peralta.
He's got one more year. He's got 25 free agent after this year.
No, he's got club options.
Oh, there
he's
it
got
is.
A 25 and a 26 club option.
Yeah, the never mind. But, you know, either way, right, this is a group that, you know, as soon as those guys get up there, Devin Williams is on year four. As soon as those guys starting to get into arbitration, they start getting eligible to be traded. You know, how much longer until Abner Uribe takes over for Devin Williams as their closer and they move on from Devin Williams at the height of his value? You know, this is a team that's going to operate like that small market team where, you know, they've signed their big extension guy. It's Christian Yelich. That's just their guy. And they're not going to pay anybody else big money. They're going to just operate on those smaller terms. That's why they traded Corbin Burnes instead of keeping him around, is because this isn't a group that's going to pay big money for anybody. They did extend Jackson Chourio, but like for $80 million and before he's ever played a Major League Baseball game, you know, Chourio could stink. Probably won't, but that's aggressive, but it's also trying to suppress the potential value of a guy who, if he's the best player in baseball, if he's Julio Rodriguez, he's worth triple that.
Yeah. There is some real risk with Jackson Chourio as a prospect.
Right.
I mean, it's not – I don't think it's, like, significant. I think he's going to be good. But, like,
he's
he's so young, and he's got all the talent. There is some form of risk with him, though. It's not like he's a slam dunk. He's not that type of slam dunk prospect where you just know there's absolutely zero, like Adley Rutschman was. Like, there was zero chance that Adley Rutschman, unless he had the career-ending injury, was not going to be at least a good big leaguer. Yeah. Like, there's more question marks about Jackson Chourio than that type of guy. So I think he's going to be really good, but especially year one too. I mean,
yeah, your first year in the bigs, he may struggle.
Just turned 20. I mean,
yeah, he's so young, and there's a long way to go in terms of those development years, right? I mean, we're talking about Michael Busch. Michael Busch played AAA like three times. Like, there's a lot of this where, you know, Sal Frelick came up. He was really strong really quickly. They loved him there. You know, what does he do in year two, right? Can he replicate the good performance, or are they going to figure out this guy's not going to burn you if you just throw him strikes? And if that's the case, if Sal Frelick can't punish strikes, then he's not going to be a very good major league player.
And then,
right?
And then you've got guys like Bryce Turang and Garrett Mitchell, who are, you know, fairly highly thought of as prospects. That, you know, are they going to take the next step because they struggled at the big league level,
right?
So it'll be interesting to see with them too.
Yeah, I'll be interested also to see whether Mizorowski Jacob Mizorowski can come in and play well. I think he'll probably be up some point this year. Double A, highly regarded pitching prospect for the Brewers. He should be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, I will say that this team here, and we'll, you know, obviously there'll be a lot of time to see what happens before then, but I think they're primed to take a 1 year reset in 2024, and then 2025 they get Woodruff back. Some of these young guys have some experience. They're not losing a lot of free agents. You know, I think they're gonna have another window here soon of playoff contention. They signed Eric Haas too. This backup team pitcher, is gonna Eric Haas is gonna turn into a Gold Glover now. Like, imagine that. But
right, and they also have Gary Sanchez, right, who might play more DH than catcher, but
he was good. He was good at catcher last year.
Yeah, he played well for the Padres. Yep. So. You know, this is a group I'm definitely sitting on them as 78 to 85 wins. I think that's the range for four teams in this division, and the Pirates overlap that range. So this division, you know, is you kind of crapped on it, right? In terms of overall ceiling, I think this division is not – it's the second worst in baseball. In terms of depth, any of these five teams could win the division. Realistically, four of the teams are competing for the division this season, which is the most of any division right now, other than the AL East, which, you know, makes it very competitive.
Is it more than the AL East? I mean, less? I mean,
depends on your thoughts on the Blue Jays. I think.
Well, it's not less than the AL. I mean, the Red Sox are competing.
Right. So I'm saying it's four in the AL East. There's four teams definitely competing here. Maybe a fifth. That would require the Pirates, things like we said, to break right, but. You know, the NL Central is going to be one of the easiest divisions to keep your eye on this year because of that. I think there's going to be a lot of swings. There were a lot last year, too, right? A bunch of different teams took turns leading the division before the Brewers ran away with it in September. So,
I think just this division has a bunch of evenly matched teams. I will say I do think that, like, if you put an individual team in the AL East out of this division, they're finishing fifth, you know, but, you know, if you flipped them with the Red Sox, they're finishing fifth.
Yep.
Like, you know, if you go to the NL East, they're finishing
third,
third, probably right there with the Mets and Marlins, like probably better than the Marlins and right there with the Mets, like most of these teams. Now, I mean, I think there's a world where, you know, like the Cubs and Cardinals probably have the ceiling to finish above the Mets and Marlins and probably not quite as good as the Phillies. Like, you know, if you put them in the West, like they're probably better than they're probably not as good as the Diamondbacks, definitely not as good as the Dodgers. They probably are better than the Padres, but they're kind of similar to the Padres.
Yeah.
There's good players. They're not bad teams. I mean, but they're not like, I think this is one of the two divisions that just doesn't have a World Series contender whatsoever in it. Like, unless they just have a ridiculous postseason like the Diamondbacks did last year. Like,
and that proves, right, you don't need to win 100 regular season games to go to the World Series. You just need the right group of players that can band together and perform, and we've seen it with the Phillies, where they have not been the best team and they've been very good in the playoffs.
The Phillies the Phillies are a much better roster than a lot. The Phillies have been abused by being in a tough division and have won. The Phillies are a true talent. Like, and they've had a lot of injuries that have affected them during seasons, like Harper being out for half a season. And I mean, that, you know, I don't want to defend the Phillies, of course, but I do think they're more like a 90 to 95 win team in a division.
Yeah, they won 90 games last year.
Yeah, they're like a 90 to 95 win team in a division that's won. That's being won by teams that win 103, 104 games, or a team that wins 103 or 104 games. But the Mets, they tied with the Mets. Okay. The Mets won 101 games in 2022 somehow. But
I mean, you know, I think there might be two playoff teams here, right? I think there's a very realistic possibility one of these teams sneaks in the wild card. We saw the Cubs missed out by one game last year. Yeah. So, you know, the eye will be, I think the onus is on these teams to go win the division, right? That's the key to the playoffs. You can't guarantee the wild card spot here, given the talent in the other divisions, and then also, you know, the negative in the other divisions, with where teams can beat up on those worst teams, the Nationals and the Rockies, right? Like there's teams that can be beaten up on in the other divisions. That's not really the case here. So
sorry, I gotta quit hating.
Hey, you know, I didn't do too much hating on the Cardinals in this one. So, with that, I think we can sign off. You know, we missed Damien. Hopefully the internet is back next week, and you know, we missed the live stream too. That's kind of disappointing, but, any closing thoughts here?
You know, as we go through these breakdowns every week, and we're not talking about a lot of news, you know, occasionally something comes up. Just a summary, we do still have Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery out there.
JD Martinez, too.
JD Martinez is still out there. Boris has just decided that his players aren't going to play this year, apparently. So, I mean, Martinez could probably sign with – if he signed with a team tomorrow, he'd probably be fine for opening day. The other guys, I don't know where they'd be at. Like, it's tough. I mean, they're pitchers, so it's going to take them some time to get, you know, ready. So we're getting really into crunch time for both of those guys. And then if they're going to play. And then we've got the other one was just that apparently Garrett Cole is having an MRI on his elbow, which we don't know any results or anything yet. It sounds like it's probably precautionary, but it's just worth mentioning since he's a superstar pitcher. He's probably the biggest superstar pitcher in Major League Baseball outside of Otani when he pitches. So Garrett Cole is, you know, that's a big deal. That's something to look out for over the next few days. And we'll definitely talk about it a lot more next week if something comes out of it. But it's kind of, I thought it was worth mentioning.
Yeah. I mean, I think until we get the results, there's nothing, but my fantasy team is scared for its life. With that, this has been the Bat Flip Podcast for Damien, David, and Matt. We'll see you guys next time.